KF was a very interesting patient that I worked with and was asked to assess quite routinely. He was a young man who'd suffered a head trauma from a motorbike accident. And in my routine assessment of this patient, I discovered that he had a digit span, which is one very conventional measure of short-term memory as defined in the sort of Brobentian terms, one item. So if you said to him, repeat after me, three, he could say three. If you said, repeat after me, seven, two, he would say seven, forgotten the other. Now, this young man, he was, I think, 23 or 4 years old at this time, had, to my mind, perfectly good memory. He was totally different from the amnesic patients that I was used to working with. He was totally different from sort of aging patients who were getting memory deficits due to old age. And you could give him formal memory tests like list learning, and he would perform at a normal level. And I thought this, as I knew the normal literature on the models of short and long-term memory, I thought this was sufficiently interesting that I approached Tim Shallis, who was at the time a young lecturer at UC, and said, I went to him. He says he remembers where we were sitting in the Marlborough pub when we had this conversation. I think that may be a confabulation. Anyhow, I said, I think the theories are wrong because I've got a patient with a short-term memory deficit whose long-term memory is perfectly normal. And he thought this was really very interesting and came over and met the patient, and that triggered our collaboration, which went on, very fruitful collaboration, which went on for many years. And we did a series of experiments with this young man, and we published our first paper in 1969, and it was followed up by a more theoretical paper in 1970, where we indeed try to challenge the orthodox model and put forward our own parallel processing view. Much of the work on short-term memory since then has been devoted to trying to decipher what it is in our cognitive skills that we need this buffer system for. It's also something that a later stage, Ros McCarthy and I worked on in more recent cases of short-term memory deficit. And I think it's generally agreed that it's now part of the language processing system. If we try and link these various short-term buffer stores, I've just been talking about the auditory verbal one, but if we go back to Alan Badley's concept of working memory, he also, in his model, incorporates a second slave system, which he calls visuospatial sketchpad. In our own work, my own work here, I think that we have not only an auditory verbal short-term store, I think we also have a visual verbal short-term store, which holds information like written letters. Now, I think it's also probably true to say that each of these stores has its own anatomical underpinnings. The visuospatial sketchpad is almost certainly impaired by right parietal lesions. There's good evidence for the auditory verbal deficit to be associated with lesions of the inferior lobe of the left parietal lobe. And I think that the visual verbal deficit is due to lesions more posteriorly at the sort of boundary of the occipital and temporal lobe, again in the left hemisphere. So That means that assessment of these skills does indeed have some diagnostic usefulness.